Hello, and welcome to Chapter Select, and a Happy New Year to all of our listeners. I am Jens, and with me today, as always, Raging Randy.
Oh man, you have no idea today. I am bringing in the new year in a mood.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been in a mood. You heard it a little bit on the Cyberpunk podcast, but listen, we record these at the same time, behind the curtain a little bit. I'm still in a mood.
This is how I like to celebrate a new year, is by getting mad at pop culture.
Listening to Randy rant.
Well, it's the worst Resident Evil movie that we've covered yet for the show.
By far, which is bad, because the first one's not good.
You know, in retrospect, you look back on it with some fondness, don't you?
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. You watch some of these movies, and that is why I went, the first one's not terrible. It's because they get so bad.
Well, I think in some ways, this is an improvement, but not enough to offset the other things that this movie does wrong. I'm going to talk briefly about what I like about this movie. Firstly, you can tell there is a stylistic shift with the change of directors. And I guess we can argue about who does music video aesthetics better, Alexander Witt or Paul W.S. Anderson. And I actually think Alexander Witt may have a slight edge, even though I do not like the way he edits action scenes at all.
No.
And most of the action scenes are borderline incoherent. It still is slicker feeling, I think, than the first movie. As a lot of, you know, he does lots of Dutch angles and, you know, fast pans and kind of things to give it a lot of dynamism.
He loves the zoom into a random object move.
Oh yeah, that too. So it's not good. You know, I'm not saying that any of this is good, but that aspect of it, you know, entertains me in a, oh man, can you believe how like music video overdone this is? And then the other thing that I enjoy is the score. I think Jeff Danna's score is a huge step up over the previous soundtrack. It's kind of a blend of electronics and orchestra. Really nice orchestrations. Some like very clever string and French horn writing in this thing. Mm-hmm. And when he brings in the electronic or rock elements, it doesn't feel forced. You know, and it's the only time that it really stuck out to me was during the church motorcycle sequence, and even that was not anywhere as annoying to me as any time that the music, the techno music, kicked in the first movie. So this is at least it's a soundtrack that knows its place and knows to not overwhelm the movie and to support the action in an intelligent way.
Right. You had brought that up to me before we were recording that you liked this soundtrack better, and I think I agree with you just for the fact that I can't tell you a single moment where I thought about the music, and that's not because it's out of place or boring or generic. It's just, like you said, it fits in the right spots. And unlike the first movie, it's not punching you in the face every time it's like, hey, there's music playing right now. It was just there in the background to help set the scene, which the scenes were terrible, but it wasn't the music's fault.
Yep. And that is pretty much where my appreciation of this movie ends.
I don't blame you. So I'm going to add to it just slightly. Mm-hmm. For the fact that we talked about, and this is, I think the reason why you don't appreciate it as much as I do is because you're not a huge Resident Evil fan. But I appreciate that at least in this movie, we got callbacks to the actual games.
Well, there's stuff that I do want your opinions on how well they handle these characters that I'm only, you know, I'm not that familiar with Jill Valentine.
Terrible.
Or
she was terrible in this game or this movie.
Okay, but, so that's not so. What aspects of it?
Okay,
what
so
is
it's
the
not,
thing that they do faithfully?
Okay, so it's not just the fact that Jill Valentine's in it, and Nemesis is in it, and Carlos is in it, and the Carlos's group. But they rip off a scene straight from Code Veronica, where Claire Redfield is running from the helicopters in the game, and then does that whole drop the gun and grab it on the way down. Alice does that near the end of the movie. They ripped that straight from the video games. I was like, at least, you know, they're trying something here. The church is a big thing in Resident Evil 3. I do like that we go to Raccoon City, which was something they did in the second game and the third game. That was the big step up from the original movie. So I like that we went in that same direction in this movie. And that's it. That's all I got. Everything else is crap. I want to start with Jill Valentine real quick. So Jill Valentine obviously was in the first game, and she's in the Arclave Mansion incident. So then when she comes back to Raccoon City, she gets denounced. Everyone calls her crazy because she's saying zombies and how the Umbrella Corporation's doing this and that. And the Umbrella Corporation, obviously, with all the money, which we see at the end of this movie, is able to spin things their direction and make her sound like a crazy person. So the Raccoon City Police Department gets rid of her. They put that in this movie, the denouncing part, just by a couple of articles that are clipped on her bulletin board in her room, which is straight out of Resident Evil 3. Again, a nice little nod. The problem is the Arklay Mountains incident got turned into the Hive, which is what Alice went into. We have no idea what Jill did at all. It was like, so was there an Arklay Mansion incident as well at the same time? What is that? Like, they didn't touch on any of that in this movie. So somebody that has never played the video games before or has no idea who Jill Valentine is just going, why do they hate her?
I can tell you that watching this movie, the only thing that I felt I knew about her was that she was a cop and that she had legs.
Yep.
Because that is this movie's... Well, don't blame me. If you want to blame somebody, you blame the cinematographer or the director, because this movie just obsesses, lingers on the leg shots. I mean, she is the fan service character in a... Like, she doesn't really do anything other than look cool in a couple of set pieces and, you know, walk around in that outfit, which kind of has the same issue that I have with the sexy cop in the Silent Hill movie that we haven't reviewed yet, where they just look like cosplay characters.
Right.
Which, absolutely. I mean, you're going to get that to some degree, right? I mean, we got that even with Phoenix Wright, which is great. There are still some characters where you think, like, that's just very good cosplay, just because you're seeing a live-action person in a ridiculous video game outfit.
And it worked with Phoenix Wright, because they were just going over the top with everything.
Exactly.
They were having fun with it. This movie attempts to be super serious while then trying to throw in all of this cosplay feel. Basically, like you said, Jill Valentine is... And I watched this again with Haley, so her commentary is always funny. She's like, oh, well, that outfit's practical. Mm-hmm. So she's a ridiculous outfit, which it was a ridiculous outfit in Resident Evil 3, but you don't have to copy that in this movie, who was a cop and is upset at Alex because she's one-upping her at every step. That was her whole point of this whole movie. It made no sense. None of this movie makes sense.
Well, the movie is all about, here's some stuff from the games, but don't worry, my original character is still the best. Though, you know, in its defense, I think my memory of this movie was even worse than it is, because I just have this thing of it looming in my head as the point where Alice's powers jumped the shark.
Next movie.
Right. And I, it's not until like the very end of this movie. But of course, that moment is stupid enough to leave a big impact on you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for most of the movie, when she is, you know, running down, you know, skyscrapers and stuff, or at least she's still like hanging from a rope, you know, that's something that Tom Cruise could potentially do in a Mission Impossible movie. It's not, you know, complete superhero yet. There are other things that she does. The thing that makes her most like a superhero is just her ability to pop in, basically to be summoned whenever required in danger. This whole movie basically is just one set piece after another where we've got these whole bunch of tertiary characters that we don't care about, like the comic relief guy.
He was my favorite character.
GTA motherfuckers.
He was my favorite character.
That's like the one meme that has come out of this movie is GTA motherfuckers.
Yeah, LJ is great.
Yeah, so you've got kind of this supporting cast that are there to get murdered by zombies, but then also to be repeatedly saved by Alice, kind of blasting in at, you know, exactly the most dramatic moment to, you know, help out Jill or help out, you know, the rest of the Star Squad. And then, you know, the whole movie is just... Okay, Umbrella has unleashed Nemesis, who turns out to be her boyfriend from the first movie, evolved and programmed him to take out the Star Squad one by one, leading to some funny sequences with Comic Relief Guy, where, you know, he's like the sole survivor because Nemesis will shoot down an entire store full of cops that were just arresting him, and he's like the one man standing because he's the civilian. So I like stuff like that. That isn't terrible. I don't know how much it, again, that middle of the movie just feels like any, it could be any other zombie film, though. It doesn't feel very Resident Evil to me, even when Nemesis is involved.
And that's, honestly, we can get on the Alice character for getting all the superhuman abilities here in the next couple movies that we remember. I hate this character because she just doesn't fit, and it ruins every aspect of everything that is supposed to be Resident Evil. So instead of focusing on Jill Valentine, who is a former member of STARS, and having her interactions with Carlos, who is a former member of the Umbrella team, which Jill absolutely hates Umbrella for what happened in the Arklay Mountains, and you have that confrontation while still trying to work together to escape this Nemesis creature, it's all, but Alice, you need to tell your story. So we're just going to, you're Umbrella, I'm STARS, cool.
Well, it's not just that. It's the movie whatever. Banks entirely on the star power of Mila Jovovich. It has basically no other name actors. I mean, you get like Odette Fehr from the Mummy movies. You've got Jared Harris, I guess, who became famous through Mad Men after this. But, you know, at the time that he made this movie, nobody knew who Jared Harris was. Though he is quite good in the little part that he's given. And, of course, I forget the actor's name, but he's Jorah Mormont on Game of Thrones as Wesker. So you've got those guys.
Well, Wesker's not here yet.
Is he not Wesker?
Well, no, I'm just saying Wesker's not in the movie.
Of course he is.
No. I know what you're thinking of. It's the
Ian Glenn. Oh, no, so he's a character called Dr. Isaacs.
He was in the first movie, too.
Oh, okay. Slightly. Oh, gosh.
He's not Wesker. Wesker, I think, doesn't even show up to like the fourth movie.
Okay, never mind.
He's
the
Wesker light.
Right.
So, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He's the fake. Okay, yeah, he's not Wesker. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry. This is my issue. These movies are so forgettable. Like, we're really going to have to struggle to kind of, I think at the very least, we need to think about what happened at the end of the previous movie whenever we think about the movie that we're currently reviewing.
Well, luckily, this movie tells you. The whole first 4 minutes is like, here's a recap of what happened in the first movie.
It does. It has a big recap of the first film with clips and everything. But then, and this is where my first big question to you comes in.
Yes.
I want to know, at the beginning of this movie, we see Alice naked waking up in a lab. And then at the end of this movie, we see Alice naked waking up in the lab, which she then escapes from. Is this even the same Alice?
Well, spoilers for other movies, probably not.
So when you say probably, but in the context of this movie, okay, at the beginning, we see Alice wake up in the lab, which I don't think is the same footage as from the first film.
I don't think so. I remember watching something that showed the differences.
So it's a different naked Alice who wakes up. But then we also cut to Survivor Alice, who we saw at the end of the last movie escaping the facility and going out into Raccoon City. And she's just like sleeping in the gas station or something, I think. So, at the beginning, there are two different Alices. Am I understanding that correctly?
No, I think that's the same Alice. I just think that Alice dies in the helicopter crash, and basically clone her.
Okay, so are you saying the Alice from the first movie is the one who at the end gets the axe in the chest or whatever it is she gets impaled with?
Yes.
And then the Alice who wakes up... So here's the thing. The Alice who wakes up at the end of the movie has all of the memories of the Alice that just died. So she couldn't have been the Alice who woke up in the lab in the beginning of the movie. So what happened to the Alice who woke up in the lab at the beginning of the movie?
That's a good question.
That's why it's like, is that just supposed to be a flashback? Because it does double back, right? The last movie ended with Alice escaping the facility, and this movie backtracks to show us a little bit of prequel to that, the build up to it, the doctor played by Jared Harris, Dr. Ashford, whose daughter is the basis for the Red Queen.
Yes.
I think we're meant to understand.
Yes.
So
she
it's
is,
the same.
She's the motto of the Red Queen.
Right, so her voice, her face, you know, you'll immediately recognize her as like, okay, that's his daughter. And kind of like in Aliens, a big chunk of the movie turns to both Jill Valentine and then later Alice being the substitute moms to protect her throughout the rest of the film. But then also, Umbrella's plan, I don't know.
So let's talk about the T-virus. So I like where they went with this at first.
Uh-huh.
So Dr. Ashford's whole purpose of making the T-virus in the movie form, I forget what it is in the video game anymore. It's been so long. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But in the movie form, his whole point of the T-virus is he's had, you know, he can no longer walk. He's lost his ability. His body's breaking down. Well, his daughter is going through the same thing and is losing her, like her cells are dying and everything. So he has created something that will regenerate those dead cells and give her the ability to walk, which she's now able to, which the problem is if you get it in too high a doses, it reanimates everything and turns you into a zombie. So you have to give yourself the vaccine all the time to keep your levels equal. So I like their attempt at showing, okay, this is what the virus was created for.
So his,
and it
his
went
goal...
over the top, and then Umbrella weaponized the hell out of it.
Right, but Umbrella's entire goal seems to just be to make two of its creations fight each other.
So they put him. So Alice and Nemesis are given two different variations. So Nemesis started because he got scratched by the liquor, and that mutated him differently than Alice, who they just straight up gave the T virus to after the first movie. So they wanted to see which creation was the better creation and which one to go with down the line.
Right. Basically. So it then ends up with basically a hostage situation where Alice's friends are held hostage by Umbrella, and Alice is being forced to fight her former lover, now Nemesis, to the death, until he then has the big bow moment where, you know, her relationship score of him is in the utmost bar. So he turns and starts shooting at the Umbrella people.
Can I just say, I'm so disappointed with how they did Nemesis in this movie.
Okay.
I know they wanted to do the whole romance thing with the character that she started to like in the first movie and stuff, but where are the mutations? Where are the... we get one decent fight, which was not great. It was you're punching a big pillow, basically, with Nemesis. It's not what was in the game. He has a couple cool moments where he's taking out the STARS members to look all badass. But there's so much missing with this character. And again, it's because everything has to be revolving around this Alice character that has nothing to do with the universe. And it's just the little set pieces and characters and points that we get trickled in as Resident Evil fans are a mere backdrop to this Alice character. And it's so annoying. And it doesn't help that as we're trying to figure out which Alice is what and why this is happening and how Alice all of a sudden appears in the church, which at first glance when I watched the movie years ago, I'm thinking, oh, you know, Dr. Ashford called her. Well, Dr. Ashford calls her later and she has no idea who it is. So it wasn't him who was saying, hey, please get to the church to save these people.
But similarly in the cemetery or later in
the cemetery. Don't bring up the cemetery, the dumbest part of the whole movie.
Okay, no, actually, now you have to talk about it because you're taking a strong stance on the scene.
Oh, God. I haven't laughed so hard since that moment. So zombies are out everywhere, so let's go to the cemetery for one. For two, what infected those dead at all?
Yeah, that's not how the T-virus works.
No. Well, I mean, it does say it's airborne. In the first movie, the Red Queen does say it does go airborne. But they're 6 feet under. How does the air get down there? Did a worm get infected and go down there and infect all the bodies? How did that work? Three, how did every single dead body in the cemetery all decide to reanimate and climb out at the exact same time?
I mean, I don't know. It reminds me of that, I think it's the eighth season finale of Doctor Who with the reanimated Cybermen. The Cybermen that are... do you remember this?
I've never watched Doctor Who.
Okay. I have the exact same issue, which is just these cells have been dead for so long. How are you doing anything to them?
Right.
That's what I want to know. But I think my point is that the thing that scene, the church scene, and then later the hospital scene with Jill and the doctor's daughter, where, you know, she's when they're fighting the zombie dogs... The thing that they all have in common is just that Alice is basically just a summon.
Yes.
That this movie just, it repeats the structure of we follow the tertiary characters until the tertiary characters are in a dire situation and then Alice bursts in to do her cool shit. Then we spend a little bit of time with Alice and her non-existent mystery and then back to the comic relief, you know? Rinse, repeat.
And And once again, the best moments in this movie are when it's character versus singular threat. Like, before Alice shows up in the church, I like the liquor scene. I like that it was them trying to outsmart these two or three liquors and a couple of the zombies. But just like the first movie, you get like two or three of these moments in this entire movie. Everything else, mm-hmm. it's character versus 100 zombies.
I would say always. I like the liquors better in this one, but I don't like the zombie dogs as much as in the first movie.
True. That is, I will agree on both.
The zombie dog scene, and this again, I mentioned earlier that I liked this, but you know, I like this in a so bad it's good way, which is the combination of that unbelievably frenetic, high energy editing with the fact that the action scenes are already incoherent and the narrative mm-hmm. itself makes no sense. It just becomes this wash of imagery, and you at some point you just glaze over, and you either let it wash over you or you're going to, you know, have a really strong
headache
reaction to it. Exactly.
So there's something I just thought about. We were talking about things making zero sense. I want to say, so we would go back to the beginning of the movie where they show Alice escaping the hospital again. Am I mistaken in it saying it was 16 hours later when all of these events started taking place?
Oh, in the first
movie?
It
was within a day. So it basically became nighttime, right? It wasn't days later, right?
I think so.
Okay, so there's two questions.
I mean, it could have been days later. There's really no indication.
Always on the bottom. I'll have to go back and watch the movie again. But when they show Alice escaping, before it goes to nighttime, I want to say it says it's like 16 hours later or so many hours later.
Okay.
So I have two questions for you. I will let you pick which one you want to try to explain first. Do you want the umbrella situation or the church situation?
All right, I'll try. I mean, just go. I'll do umbrella first, but we'll go with both of them.
So did Raccoon City always have a wall around it, or did they build it 10 years faster than Trump ever wished he could?
My theory, I mean, it must have had a wall prior to the events of the first film. I mean, we were starting prior to the events of the first film, so I assume that at some point in the years leading up to this outbreak, this wall was constructed.
And the citizens are cool. Because if I remember right, for at least the way I perceived Raccoon City in the video games, was it's a not giant town. It's not like a Seattle or Cleveland.
Yeah, it has to be like a built community. Like,
it's a decent community, but in this movie, it's giant. You have skyscrapers in this town. So at what point do they – that's a giant wall to go around this entire city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Berlin.
So that part always throws me when I watch this movie. The second one is, again, whether this is a day or two or three, how does a guy in the church understand that his crazy zombified wife has to eat people? It just becomes cool with it before understanding even what is going on in the world. It's like 16 hours later, my wife wants to eat people. Cool, do it. Just
you think he's been too isolated to understand the nature of the outbreak around him?
I don't think it's been long enough.
Okay.
Because everyone else unless you're Alice or Jill, everyone else in this movie, at least at the beginning, is going, what the fuck is happening?
It feels like the sort of thing that would happen like four seasons into The Walking Dead.
Yes. Well, technically two, but spoilers for that and a barn. But anyway.
Okay.
So I
stopped watching The Walking Dead after season one, actually.
I love the show. It has gone on way too long. I am glad that they have finally announced the final season of that. It has had some mountains and valleys, that's for sure. But
I'm one of those weirdos who was upset about the changes made from the comics in season one and abandoned it that way.
Because I was too comic fanatical. I'm not someone that reads the comics and stuff. I've read them since, and I kind of like that it's a completely different world. So it was really nice to go back. I think I have four or five of the collection books of The Walking Dead comics. And it's really interesting to see the character changes that have happened and who's still alive and who's not.
I love how he just randomly decided to end it. Like issue 120 something or whatever, he just said, that's the last one. And
I'm curious what's going to happen when they finish the TV show. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But again, I've liked some of the every time I'm like, I'm done with the show, they do something that draws me back in. And again, I'm 10 seasons into that damn show. I'm going to I have to finish it out at this point.
I hear you. I hear you. Well, I'm just trying to avoid.
I think we've hit all of the main points. Again, the story in this is so convoluted and insane. It doesn't make any sense and is only going to get worse, Jens.
Oh, well, we haven't talked about quite everything. One of the things that happens, and I don't, we need to bear this in mind, I think, for the next movie, is that Dr. Ashford gets shot.
Yes.
When they're trying to force Alice to, which makes no freaking sense. I mean, why would, who was it? It was not Dr. Isaacs, was it? It was Major Kane, I think, the Thomas Kretschmann character.
Yes.
He's an umbrella guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was trying to force this fight to happen, and he decided that the first person that he should execute to convince Alice to do his bidding is Dr. Ashford, his most valuable asset. And then he even makes a point of it. Like, look, I just killed my most valuable asset. Now fight. Like, why didn't he shoot LJ?
Well, because technically Ashford has already given him the virus. Alexander Isaacs is now mutating the stuff. You have Wesker in the background who's not made in a movie appearance.
This is always such a foolish. Whenever you decide that you don't need a particular scientist anymore because you've got their research, you're always shooting yourself in the foot. You never know when you're going to need that scientist again.
Right. Absolutely. My biggest question is, how did this movie once again triple its budget in the box office?
My first one was a huge success, and it was riding those coattails.
$45 million budget, $130 million in the box office. That's crazy.
I think there's just a, you know, he must, Paul W.S. Anderson must know what he's doing with the, you know, having his wife be this, basically being her agent as well as her primary collaborator, mm-hmm. because there is a dedicated, it seems like the two of them have a dedicated fan base who will go see anything that they make.
Well, Monster Hunter just came out.
Uh-huh.
And we'll have to watch that eventually.
Yes, as soon as it's on demand.
Right, that's not Paul W.S. Anderson, is it?
Yes, of course it is.
Is it? I just know Mio is in it, so of course Paul's in it. God damn it.
Yep. Oh. Yeah, he's directing it. He only wrote this one, so you can still blame the story on him.
Well, he produced it, too.
Yes. But, Alexander Witt was the director. German fellow, I think, made that. He has not made anything else. He's got a bunch of camera and electrical credits. He's got DP credits. Okay, so it's a director of photography making his first movie.
Crazy. I'm actually looking at the stuff he's worked on as far as being the second unit director.
Mm-hmm.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, lots of big movies.
And then there's Resident Evil Apocalypse, which is his directorial debut. Whoops.
Well,
The sniper. I always like when directors show themselves in the movie.
I think it looks a lot nicer than the first movie visually, except for the transfer. The transfer is worse. I actually think it might not be full 4K. I think it might be an upscale, right. Whereas the first one was definitely full 4K. So the 4K transfer was slightly worse, but I think as far as the aesthetics of the movie, I think this is a better looking movie. But say one more thing, which is that this 4K disc crashed my player.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Were you able to bring it back from the undead?
Yeah, I have the X800.
You do realize it only crashed on you because we're also reviewing Cyberpunk at the same time. So everything has to crash.
It's such a funny. Yeah, it's like this is just like Cyberpunk. And this is a freaking, a Sony 4K player playing back a Sony studio disc. You know, it's Sony making the software for and the hardware, and at the 1 hour mark, it just hard froze my player, and I had to unplug it and to boot it back up, and then kind of backtrack to that moment from a scene that was further ahead.
Are we ready to rate this thing?
I'm gonna let you go first because I'm still pondering. And some closing thoughts as well, please.
It's not good. Again, I like that they are finally, unlike the first one, we actually have bits of the real Resident Evil lore, but the original Resident Evil lore in this game, and characters and locations and moments from the video game, so a little bit more fan service in this one than the first movie. Other than that, everything else is terrible. The plot makes absolutely no sense. as we've said multiple times, they just jump from location to location, and it just is ridiculous. Alice shows up randomly. How she showed up at the church makes no sense. The graveyard scene might be the biggest boneheaded thing I've ever seen in my life. It just, none of this movie makes sense. The characters have no character to them. They're all so bland. There's no point to any of this crap.
I mean, the point of the ghost characters is to show up at the very end, you know, in a van to get clone Alice out of there. Whether she's clone Alice or not, I mean, they talk about how she healed. I don't know whether she's literally a fresh clone or whether she just regenerated. It seemed to me an implication that she regenerated, so it would be the same Alice.
Yeah, I mean, it's still T-virus stuff, I guess.
I'm wondering there. If the very first virus is just the very first Alice is just meant to be one of the clone Alices that come later. But that would require a level of foresight from Paul W.S. Anderson that I just don't think he has, considering the lack of continuity between these movies. It would be shocking if this one scene at the beginning of this movie was setting up something like a movie or two down the road.
Absolutely not. But I will say, if I spoiler alert, possibly for the third or fourth movie, I just remember a scene where she shows that she can get cut and regenerate really fast or heal really fast.
Well, we haven't talked about her crazy power at the end of this movie.
Oh, do we have to?
Yes, she's got the ring kind of telekinetic making, like she can look at you in a mean way and you start bleeding out of all of your orifices.
But she doesn't have to look at you. She has to look at a camera that you're looking through a monitor through.
Right. She just has to picture you in her head. Kind of, you know how the Death Note works? You have to like picture your enemy in your mind's eye and then write his name down. Anyway, she can think about you and your brain will bleed out of your skull. So that's the point where she officially goes into completely overpowered territory.
That was the perfect period on this movie, I think.
Very funny.
It's I wasn't trying to go there, but I did. So my worst score so far in our six movies we watched on this is a 4 for Wing Commander. This is worse than Wing Commander. I'm giving it a 3.
I might, I'm wondering how low. I want to go really low on this. Like, I almost want to give it a 2.
See, the problem is, we have several more of these to go.
I know.
I worry it gets worse.
My memory tells me that it does not get worse for a while, but it eventually gets worse. Let's put it that way. I guess I'm going to give it a 3 as well, just to give myself a little bit of room to go down.
Yeah.
We might watch Uwe Boll movies at some point, and then I have to go much lower. I don't know how we're going to, like, is it pretty much everything Uwe Boll just going to sit at a 1? I don't know.
We will have to see. I like that, once again, you and I agree way more on movies than we do on video games. We have had the exact same score. We've done 6 movies now. We've had the exact same score 4 times. We've been 0.5 different on Ace Attorney, and I liked Like a Dragon slightly more than you. Other than that, we've been exact. No, excuse me. You liked Wing Commander one more point than me. So 3
yes.
out of.
I enjoy the fans. Yeah, it's like you like the fan service in this. I liked some of the fan service in Wing Commander.
Right. So there you go. That will do it for the second Resident Evil movie. In 2 weeks, it will be Resident Evil Extinction, which I had to look up to make sure that was the third movie, because who the hell knows?
I know.
The way it is going. So check us out in 2 weeks, January 15th, for that. Next week, we will be finishing up our talk on Cyberpunk 2077. As I promise, I will finish that game. I don't want to, but
do
I
it.
Will.
I
will do it. I'm working my way through slowly. Luckily, there's not a lot of games that are distracting me. There are a couple now, but not that many. So I will get there. So that episode will come out January 8th, and that will be it for Cyberpunk. So check us out on both of those. Of course, like and subscribe and comment on all the different podcast services that are out there on YouTube, on W2Mnet, on all of that stuff. Check out Jens at Aperture Silence on Twitter. I'm at Randy Isbell. We are at @chapter_select. And again, thank you so much. And hopefully 2021 goes up from this movie. We're starting from the bottom, and now we're going to go up, right?
If you say so.
No Uwe Boll in 2021 to make sure I'm right. All right.
You know what? I can promise you that.
All right. See
We've
you guys.
Got a large enough catalog.
We really do. We really, really do. All right, guys. See you in 2 weeks.